Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today my guest is Randolph Rogers, or Randy, and he is the author of The Key of Life, A Metaphysical Investigation. Randy is the president of Telefilms Incorporated, an LA-based production company, and his story is a wonderful story of not only that, the importance of internal guidance, but also the theme that none of us are really separate from any other, and that is really a very important part of our journey, is to find the connection that we all have to the spirit that envelops us and allows us to, go through our lives on the path we're guided. And that's the key to your book, is that you have a path and you need to stay on your path. And basically, if you're able to do that, then you can learn the lessons you came to learn and help others as well. Your book, The Key of Life, is a wonderful, demonstration of how you take one step at a time and just follow the path. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Kolb. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you want to give our listening audience a little bit of your background and then your story?
Well, sure. My background is I've been a photographer all my life. From the time I was 10 years old, I'd had a camera, and I started out working at a newspaper and then went into television back in this small town of Johnstown, Pennsylvania, in western Pennsylvania.
Right.
And I worked there a few years and out in the Phoenix market for 13 years in television news, covering the news as a photojournalist. And then the network hired me out in Los Angeles, and that's how I ended up in Los Angeles, working for NBC Nightly News and the Today Show and any other thing that we shot footage for during those days. So I spent 20 years in that business, and then I moved on into the motion picture end of it when the news started turning a little tabloid for me at the end of the 90s, or at the beginning of the 90s, and I moved into my own production. So that's where this story starts, is midway into the 90s. In 1995, I had moved into a new home here in Los Angeles, and I was watching the sunset this one evening as I had moved in, and I had the feeling that a friend of mine had passed away from grade school.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get the thought out of my head, so I made a call back east to ask my mom if she knew what happened to the family. I didn't tell anyone at that point that I was having these premonitions about her, but I started searching for her, and over a year's time I hadn't found her, and finally things started to go up a notch, I would say, when I had a dream and an out-of-body experience one night, almost a year later. And that pushed me then to really tell somebody. I told my mother what was happening, and I needed to find some relative of hers to find out what had happened. And to really speed the story along, what happened was, within a month, my mother had found her sister, who was a nun down near Pittsburgh, and she told my mom that she was sorry to tell us this, but Kathy had passed away from ovarian cancer. Well, I about dropped the phone because I was working on an ovarian cancer video at the time.
Right.
And I could see not only that event, that was just one of what I had noticed happening in my life all along, were these synchronicities, I called them. And for the viewers that might not know what a synchronicity is, it's the same as it's what people would normally call a coincidence. When two things that just mean maybe something to you, but you'd see them repeatedly within matters of minutes or hours or days of an event happening and something else happening that coincided with that. And this was happening now to me all the time. I was noticing the synchronicity of my life. And so I went back east then to my reunion that had been coming up, and I stopped in to see the nun to talk to her about Kathy. And while I was there, another coincidence happened, that her other sister, Kathy's other sister, Chris, happened to call from Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my dream that had taken place in the out-of-body experience and everything, that evening, I was out in Palm Springs. And I mean, I wasn't physically in Palm Springs. I was in my house in Los Angeles. But when I got up and wrote down the dream, I said the dream took place in Palm Springs. Well, that's where Kathy was when she passed away. And I had no knowledge of any of this because I hadn't seen her since 1973. So this started me, the newsman in me wouldn't let go of the story.
Right.
You know, that from having worked in the news, I couldn't drop it. I told my wife.
You got to follow the next clue, huh?
Right. I had to just keep following clue after clue, and it just kept. And it was.
It's
and
a
the
great adventure,
were,
though, isn't it?
Oh, it,
isn't it,
it
a
was.
Great adventure,
it was,
yeah.
If everybody lived their life like that, it would be incredible to see, because that's what I did. I just watched for the synchronicity, and I just let it lead me down this path. And one thing led to another, and that led me to a Russian acupuncturist, mm-hmm. who I immediately discounted this, because I was this newsman. My background was that I was raised in a Roman Catholic family, and I'd gone to mm-hmm. Catholic grade school with this girl, and I didn't have any knowledge of anything metaphysical or past lives or out-of-body experiences, and all this stuff started happening to me, and I'm trying to make sense of it. So I'm mm-hmm. what I was doing was keeping a log of and a journal of everything, and that's
which was
important.
Good when you wrote the book,
right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that comes in.
It helped a lot.
It helps a lot to have everything written down, especially on the date and times. And
right.
when you read the book, is factual. It's a true story,
mm-hmm.
true names, true times, dates. Everything that occurred in it is exactly the way it happened. So I was keeping this journal every night when I'd go to before I'd go to sleep. I'd write down what had happened that day, and amazingly, a lot of the things I was starting to say and talk about were coming true. That I somehow had this ability to do this, and I didn't realize how it was. And it goes back to when I was a small child, and my mom, I remember, would tell me to always listen to your inner conscience, she called
right.
it, or that inner voice is going to tell you right from wrong, and always mm-hmm. listen to it, will guide you. I had no knowledge that was actually some spirit guiding you along the way, that there was somebody really there helping you with those thoughts that came into you. When I started to catch on to how this was really working, it opened up a whole new world for me.
Well, I can tell you it comes in very handy. I'm a plastic surgeon. I was a trauma uh-huh. surgeon for many years. And when you've got somebody dying on the table, bleeding to death, that still small voice tells you exactly what you need to do to save them.
Right.
And many trauma surgeons know that. I mean, it's, you know, many people who are like fighter pilots in battle, trauma surgeons, you know, people who are on the edge, so to speak, use that voice, because
yeah.
that's the one that guides you to the successful, you know, that the patient doesn't die on you.
Right.
You get out of the dogfight alive. So.
It's keeping you on your path. And
it is, minute by minute.
Right. It's your gut instinct. I mean, it doesn't even
mm-hmm.
have to be a voice. It's just a feeling.
Right, a feeling.
You really,
yeah.
women probably handle it more than men because they kind of are more in tune with their feelings a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell everyone, it's going with your feelings. To let your feelings guide you along your life. And some people say, oh, if I let my feelings do that, I'll just be out of control. They feel like they lose control. But in reality, you're in better control of things whenever you, as long as they're, you know, not just crazy feelings. I mean,
yeah.
you have to be able to understand what's really guiding you and what isn't. And I've always been able to differentiate between my conscious mind and my
mm-hmm.
subconscious.
Well, that's why it's important within spiritual growth. You mentioned theosophy in your book. In fact,
right.
I just gave a lecture to the Theosophy Society here in Atlanta. And, you know, basically, as we grow, the first thing we gain control of is of our physical, and the second is of our emotional, and then the third is more of our mental, like the ability to quiet your mind, like you,
right.
it's so important and you talk about in your book. But I do want to mention that when you have a strong feeling, like I had an anesthesiologist, I have a surgery center with four operating rooms, and I had anesthesiologist who wasn't my normal anesthesiologist is there part-time, and every time I passed him in the hall, I would bristle with anger.
Uh-huh.
Now, why do you think I was bristling with anger whenever I passed him?
Well, to me, I think it's...
He was doing something, right?
Or you had some prior relationship to him in a past life that you dragged over into this life, and there's something... I know that feeling that you have. Sometimes
yeah.
there's people that just they show up and you don't know what it is, but there's something about
them.
They annoy you.
But,
right.
but the emotion is so strong. But what I found out was that he was taking fentanyl and giving my patient, you know, something else.
Oh, but
so
you knew this on a...
Well, I didn't know it at first. My personnel, my nursing and tech personnel discovered it, you know, because of irregularities in the count. I mean, you know, in surgery centers, there's controls, you know, and he got around them for a little bit by making excuses, but he couldn't get around them, you know. We eventually found him out and turned him in. But basically, the point is that when an emotion comes on you very strongly that you have no reason to have just in your logical mind, you need to probably quiet your mind and ask why, because there's a reason. That emotion's coming on to tell you something.
Oh, yeah. You can sense things, and the reason you can sense it, I mean, this book really gets into a lot of different subject matters about who we are, why we're here, how we're all connected, and incredible stories that have happened both during this that are in the book, and then also since the book's come out, because a lot of people ask me, does this stuff still happen to me, that these events, or did it quit at the end after I got to the end of the book? And I said, oh no, I still have the synchronicities occurring every day of my life. I see them happen. In fact, I have a great one that has to do with an anesthesiologist, and it happened 6 years ago. I almost died. I was on a chute. I doubled up in pain, and I didn't know it, but I had a gallstone that had passed into my bile duct, and I just turned 50 years old, and I had acute pancreatitis. I didn't know it. I was rushed to the hospital, and I was in really bad shape. I mean, they put me on drugs for the first week. They didn't expect me to live. But first of all, they said they're going to have to wait a week before they could even attempt to go in and remove my gallbladder. And when I did, it wasn't good that I was going to make it through this. Right. But I did. I pulled through it. But I was no food, no water for 3 months on an IV. And everything that could happen to me. I got home. I wasn't doing real well. I had an infection that I didn't know that had started, and I was running a fever. And I had to go back into the hospital for more surgery the next day. And my dad had passed away 6 months earlier. Mm-hmm. And so my mom calls me up that night, and she's worried about losing me. And I'm not worried at all about dying. I've completely lost my fear of dying. I'm telling her, no, don't worry, I'm not going to die. I don't die. I'll never die. And I'm trying to explain this to her. And she's saying, well, but I talked to Dad last night, and I asked him to be with you, and he's going to be beside you. And he told me he'll be there watching over you, and don't worry. And I said, well, I'm not worried, Mom, and I'm fine. And so the next day I get wheeled into the surgery room, and I'm sitting there on the gurney, and the doctor walks up to me and sticks out his hand, and he says, hi, I'm Bob Rogers. I'm your anesthesiologist.
Oh, really?
Well, that was my dad's name. Same name, same spelling on his name tag. And I looked up at him, and I said, of course you are. I couldn't expect anything less in my life to happen. And my mother said, and who stands beside you the entire time is the anesthesiologist.
Yeah,
it's right by your head. And,
yeah.
That's another little example of how this communication comes from this other side. You don't pass away. I talk about this a lot in the book about what happens when you die, that you don't really die. Your body stops, and if I fell over right now, my body would be sitting in its chair, but the energy that's driving me would engulf this entire place that we think is huge, this world and everything in it. It would just saturate it with with that spirit of the energy that was me. And I said, that's where this communication comes from. We're literally walking around inside this other world that we get our life and our energy from, this spiritual world that we go to when we pass on. And that communication comes over in simple things like that, where my mom asked for my dad, and then there's a sign put there. There will always be a sign or some kind of thing. You'll be driving down the road, and some music will come on, the car radio, that will, all of a sudden, a thought of somebody, maybe it was close to you, it passed on, will come into your head. That's just them saying hello to you. The communication is so subtle and so easy and smooth that most people let it pass by them and don't recognize it.
Yeah, I had a very interesting thing happen. When I went home to visit my mother at Christmas, and she lives about 3 hours from any airport, so I was driving back in a rental car, and I became aware of three spirits with me in the car. And one was a spirit that's with me all the time, a protective spirit, assigned to protect me, which is interesting. I've got lots of stories about this particular one. But the other was my father, who had passed 5 years ago, and the other was his sister, who passed, my aunt passed about 3 years ago. and they were in the car, and they told me to be very careful that there was, they said, a booby trap or a trap up ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went, now it's really icy and cold, and, you know, the roads, there's snow all over the place, because I think it had snowed like 3 feet. And I was coming up over the thing, and a tanker truck just comes off the ramp and completely ignores me, you know, just,
yeah.
You know how big tankers are, and I'm not in that great of a rental car either, I'm mid-size. So I stop completely on the highway. I mean, I just stop, and then the car right behind me doesn't hit me but goes around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that's a recipe for disaster,
right.
The tanker, you, and a car right behind you. But I was warned about it a good half a mile before it happened.
Yeah.
And I was told, this is what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to stop, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting?
It's very cool.
It's very protective.
Especially the fact that you had three of them with you, because I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have multiple things, spirits come around me at times. I've had my dad,
yeah,
and another spirit that's with me that I write about in the book that led me to this Theosophical Society, this
right,
L.W. Rogers.
Right.
Had both of them beside me at times talking. And I've seen them in different sessions that I've,
mm-hmm,
I've done together, you know, or multiple spirits around you. So it's not only going to be one. Sometimes you'll feel multiple things occurring. And,
mm-hmm,
and it's funny, you tell these stories. My wife, Susan, who I write about her in the book, she,
right,
when she wasn't buying into any of this, so she was playing the devil's advocate.
She was third
it.
Dimension.
Right, she was playing the third. She was playing this devil's advocate,
right,
through the whole thing. Really, I mean, strongly pushing me the opposite direction or trying,
mm-hmm,
to. But when it all said and done, at the end of the day, I'm at the end of the book. This story isn't in there. She came into work one day and starts to tell me, you know what, those things that you said happened to me or happened to you, I understand it's starting to happen to me now. And,
mm-hmm,
and she tells me a story about walking the dog, and she was taking the dog for a walk and got to the curb and was ready to step off the curb, and her inner voice said, don't step off the curb. She just,
mm-hmm,
clearly heard not to step off the curb, and she didn't. She listened,
yeah,
to it and stopped, and a car careened around the corner and would have, she said this, there was no doubt she and the dog would have both been killed,
right,
if she would have stepped off the curb. But she listened to what I had,
mm-hmm,
told her I was listening to all along, and,
mm-hmm,
and did what, and it, and by, you know, by that chance, she didn't get hit by the car. And she came out of that shaken, but understanding what I was dealing with. And
yeah, you
so,
just had it happening more often. But, you know,
right,
most people, if you talk to them, you know, as a history of being a trauma surgeon, I often ask people very important questions at important times in their lives, you know, like when they're in the ER all battered up. There's this one story I have of a woman I was called in at 5:30 in the morning to see, and she had gone to Waffle House at 3 in the morning, and got somehow her and her friends got in an altercation with the cook, and the cook took the that condiment tray and broke,
right,
it over her head,
oh,
and so she was a mess. I mean, she
yeah,
had multiple lacerations. And so I walked up to her and I said, didn't something tell you not to go to the Waffle House?
Yeah.
And she said, yes. And
yeah,
I said, you know, I said, you're in her voice? She said, yes. I said, why did you go? She says, my friends talked me into it.
Right.
So I believe we go through a series of spiritual tests where the inner voice says something.
Right.
And sometimes our own stubborn nature, especially if it's something we really want to do, or our friends, or, you know, whatever, our family, our church, whatever, talks us into going against the voice. And then sometimes you end up in the ER with someone like me going, didn't something tell you not to do that?
Yeah.
Which is really hilarious.
Right. Well, it is. And, you know, that's like I say, you're on your path, and then you step off of it slightly, and you get,
yeah,
pushed right back onto it again.
That's right.
So you can never really get off your path. You're going to
you
get
can't.
Pushed. You're going to learn a hard
exactly
lesson.
That's exactly true.
And it's something that,
yeah,
you know, and maybe there was something in that lesson to learn. I mean, you may have made
like
some
humility.
Other, right. There, I mean, sometimes, I have the same thing. In my book, I write about the fact that I was, you know, I ended up in Arizona and I was,
mm-hmm,
almost killed in a motorcycle accident.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I just accepted it. An old man turned in front of me. He wasn't watching what he was doing.
Right.
And I almost got killed as a result of it. But there were other underlying reasons why every event occurs in your life. And
there are.
And
absolutely.
Because of that event, I met my first wife, Judy.
Right.
And because of that, I mean, in the book, I lay out exactly what happened because,
mm-hmm,
of that marriage. And I didn't understand any of this till I went into the acupuncturist and,
mm-hmm,
and did the acupuncture session with Lucy, which I started to talk about there, that I was led to this woman, a Russian acupuncturist by the name of Lucy Postoloff, and she lives out here in Los Angeles and practices out here, a regular acupuncture clinic. But a friend of mine had said, oh, if you go in there, she can put these needles in you a certain way, and you can do these past life regression. And, and I said, well, what's a past life regression? I don't understand. And she started explaining this to me and how you have these other lives you've lived. And I didn't really believe any of it, so I kind of just thanked her and thought I'd just go on my way. And I said, if I need you, I'll call and I'll set it up. Well, I left, and, boy, three or four synchronicities clearly pointed the way back to Lucy for me. And I lay them out in the book, how I was led to call her up then on that Monday when I got in from this weekend, and the, a series of more synchronicities occurred when I got into Lucy's office, where I started to tell Lucy that I'm working on a cancer video, and she goes, oh, my mom has cancer really badly. She has breast cancer, and she's in this program at UCLA, and she starts to describe the program that I was shooting the video on. So I knew it wasn't, everybody would say, wow, what a coincidence you're in. Because only 70 women were in the program, and I'm in a city out here with 14 million people around me. And so it was it was pretty clear that I was led to be in the room with her, and that's where events really took off, when I started describing past lives and who I was and who she was, and then proving it to her.
Right. And, well, you know, we have many opportunities to understand who we are, and I really like the when at one point in time, not for everybody, but for many of us, at one point in time, past life regression does provide a wonderful opportunity for us to understand why we're in relationship with the people we're in relationship in this life, because it correlates to previous lives, and that I was able to participate in past life regressions. I've done it to other people, and I've had it done to myself. And sometimes you get a spontaneous regression where you just, a scene, especially in meditation, scenes will play out, and then if you go investigate, you find that what you saw in the scene was actually historical. You know, I mean, especially if it was recorded. And so I find that at a certain point on your path, the information from past life regressions is very, very useful in determining relationships. I think that that's
that's what it's all about. I mean, 95% of the problems you have are in relationships, and when you understand that they're dragged over from some other karmic thing that you brought along with you, it's an incredible journey to go on and start, and it makes you understand that you should really never judge anyone out there by what they're going through in their life or what they did, or, and I'm talking anyone. I mean, from Osama bin Laden on down on up to the highest person you hold in esteem. Every one of them is a character that we wrote into this play that we're in here. And we did write the script to this, and we are playing these roles, and the roles we're playing are important to our spiritual growth. That's what we're here for, is to attain a spiritual growth by playing this role. And also there's a karmic debt thing playing out that's why you can't judge someone else, because you don't know what agreement they made with other people. I have incredible stories about that, too, about people that just they can't understand why their lives were going a certain direction. And the minute I pointed it out to them, how they, without even knowing their prior relationship, I told her who all they were how they were all connected. They had written this script together, and boom, there were synchronistic signs there pointing to the fact that all of them had, unknown to each other, known each other some, or had done some things that were all interrelated to each other in this life. And they looked at it going, wow, what a coincidence. It's no coincidence. The script you wrote and you're playing right now was very unselfish. I mean, one involved a woman who gave up her baby that she had, which she had with another guy a coworker, and her husband stayed with her during the whole thing. Through the whole thing, she gave up the baby to another couple that needed, you know, just through an adoption agency. And then they were having dinner one night there when the woman that she gave the baby up to brings out her wedding album and starts pointing out her wedding and all this, where it had taken place, and she asked, well, how did it get over there? Well, we used this such and such company to ship the stuff, and the next thing you know, she goes, well, that's where I work, and well, who handled it? Well, it was the guy that she had the affair with.
My goodness.
You can clearly see that all, and it, I mean, what are the chances that you're in a that you gave up a baby to an adoption agency, mm-hmm. and you ended up there with the people that ended up adopting the baby, and here somehow their wedding and everything hinged on the fact that the person she had the affair with and the company she worked with were involved too. And it was, I said, that was very unselfish what you did. I said, that couple mm-hmm. couldn't have a baby.
Right.
And you gave it up. I know you worry about it, but the baby's where it's supposed to be. I said, the baby, you, your husband, the guy you mm-hmm. had the affair with, and the two people that adopt the baby, you've all written this script that you came in here to play. I said, because
yeah.
if you had a baby with your husband, you wouldn't give it up. It would be your baby. But
right.
you had to have it with someone else to give it to do mm-hmm. this. And I said, and the amazing thing is that this group of spirits wrote this script out and then came in and played out, because she couldn't understand why she did this. And
right.
until she read my book, then she fully mm-hmm. saw the synchronicities that had occurred in her life.
Yeah, I wanted to just comment something you said earlier. It's my belief that even if you're playing on the dark side or the light side, you know that this is a plane of duality, so we play different roles,
mm-hmm.
you're probably judged on life review, and of course life review is your spirit judging you, not like any or yourself judging you, your higher self judging you. It's not really judging, it's more like just reviewing the life.
Right.
But you probably, when you go to life review, it's probably more like, well, you were on your path except you veered off here and then that happened, and then you're on your path again and then you veered off here and that happened. But the idea is that even if you are Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, or, you know, the Dalai Lama,
right.
you have a path. And so when you get to the end of your life and you're doing life review, I really believe that you just have to see how closely you did your soul contracts. We have these different soul contracts, and then we also have these different times when we can exit if we want. And you may have been aware of some of yours that, you know, you might have been able to exit when you had the motorcycle accident.
Or
and
the
then
last
you,
thing, yeah.
And then you might have been able to exit when you had the pancreatic issue. And if you do your numerology, you may find that there's a recurrent pattern of, and even if you don't get deathly ill, there's still a time when you could exit that then you make a decision to stay because you're going to do the next set of contracts.
Right.
And that's, it's very interesting at how, you know, it's almost like we sign up for another round, you know.
Right.
Okay, no, I'm not done yet. I still want to play in the game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think it comes in 7-year cycles.
And playing the role, I mean, the understanding of who you are, I mean, I get to that in the book, and then I talk about it a lot now when I'm on the road here about
mm-hmm.
about playing this role that we're in and how and who we really are, that we're, you know, I'm not really Randy Rogers, and you're not really Dr. Susan Kolb. You're a spirit that's playing the role.
Right.
And the way that works is I've been using a really great example, and it actually happened at one of my book signings, but I use the example of James Bond,
mm-hmm.
and that, because that is a great character to put out, and everyone understands the character when you say the name James Bond. They think
mm-hmm.
of a British Secret Service agent with a license to kill and has
right.
all these women in his life, and he goes on all these great adventures, and that iconic character is set in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, how many people have played James Bond? Well, we
many.
Have Sean Connery and
right.
you know, Roger Moore and
mm-hmm.
Daniel Craig's playing him right now. Pierce
right.
Brosnan has played him. And I said, and if I asked any one of those actors if they were James Bond, they'd say, oh, no, I'm not James Bond, but I played him.
But I played him.
and in fact, I got to do that one day at a signing, it was George Lazenby who had played James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, are you James Bond? Well, no, I played him once.
Right.
And I said, well, I'm not Randy Rogers. I played him once. And you're not
That's
Dr.
Right.
Susan Cold. You
no.
played her once. And I said, and then the character is set and embedded, because
mm-hmm.
that's the other problem people have with reincarnation. Well, how can this person come back and say they were Cleopatra, and this person saying she was Cleopatra? And
mm-hmm.
I said, well, do you understand that all of you could have been Cleopatra,
exactly.
played that role?
Yeah.
Because
right.
the role is set. We're on a timeline here
mm-hmm.
that we only know the time that has passed. We're stuck on the line. When you step off outside this line
mm-hmm.
to the spiritual world, the timeline is there, frozen, out there in front of us. It appears not to be moving from outside the timeline. It
mm-hmm.
only is moving when you're on it. But
right.
you can jump into any role again. You can go in and play. You can take on that character, just like the Sean Connery and Pierce Brosnan and all these guys have played James Bond. Yet there's really only one James Bond, and that's the character. And
right.
there's really only one Randy Rogers. But when I'm gone, somebody else will play him on this timeline. Or somebody else is playing him right now, even.
Right.
And the reality is you can have this going on. It's continuous. So it's an amazing, incredible thing to understand.
And I think that there's something, you mentioned in the book that you read, The Holographic Universe. I think I interviewed the author of that book.
Oh, really?
The Holographic Universe, it's the idea that the reality as we know it is a hologram, which is like going through time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, understanding what a hologram is helps you understand why numerology is so accurate and why synchronicity occurs. It's almost like if you can understand what a hologram is, that each
right.
piece of the whole represents the whole.
Right.
And I did a lot of study with Dan Winter, who actually was my roommate for a while. So when I came home at midnight from taking care of trauma patients, he would give me lectures on sacred geometry. So that was interesting. So I had that tells you that spirit puts the people in your life, sometimes in your house, when you need to learn what they have to teach. which is really funny. But Dan is one of the world's teachers on sacred geometry. And if you study sacred geometry and you study the physics of a hologram, I think you can begin to understand numerology, why numerology works, you know, the science behind how everything's set up, and then also synchronicities, because synchronicities are like catching the like things in different settings. It's almost like you're seeing each part of the whole. You're seeing something, and then you see it over here, and then you see it over here. And it's my feeling that when your energy raises high enough, I think when your energy is really, really low, you may not recognize the synchronicities and just call them coincidence. But as your energy rises and you become more able to hear and see and feel the spiritual world, that your attention is then turned to whatever you need to have it turned to. Like, how often, I don't know if this happens to you, but I often look down and it's 11:11.
Right.
And that's to remind us that all is one.
Yeah. And see, certain numbers will mean certain things to certain people. I had a woman calling me yesterday that the number 22 meant something in her life and her husband's, and it always appeared around them. And that's really what they're tuned into, and it works. And for me, it's the numbers 8 and 23. My number was an 8, and Kathy's number was a 23. And when those numbers are together, it's like dynamite to me that things are going to occur. Here's an incredible story that has to do with that. And I'm just like everyone else. I mean, I even though I understand these things, and the funny thing is when you do start to see the synchronicity in your life and you understand there's a purpose to everything and you're on this path and you're following it, things smooth out for you. You kind of don't worry about, you don't sweat about things anymore, and you don't try not to get caught up in the drama of the play we're in.
Right.
So, but I'm just like everyone else where things occur and trying to push your buttons and move you and get some kind of response. And I came home one night, I had an IRS letter here, and it wasn't anything big, just they needed some data for income tax that I had filed 2 years earlier. And I was heading out to Chicago, and now I had this to do, and I ran down the office, had to go back through all these papers, copy all this, rush it up to my accountant, drop it off, and I'm rushing back, and I'm thinking, oh, I got it. I felt myself getting caught up in worrying about too many things. So I turned off the road in Venice, here, Venice, California, and on Abbot Kinney, and stopped at this Mystic Journey bookstore to drop off a book and see about doing a talk there. Well, I was leaving the bookstore and walking down the street, and something tells me in my gut instinct saying, look in this window here. You got to see something in here. And I look in, and it's a little cafe, and I looked back, and it was some vegetarian cafe, and I looked at my watch. It was 3:30, and I thought, well, I'm hungry. I'm going to go in and get something. But then my conscious mind, immediately, like you said, why did you go into this place or not go in? My conscious mind's saying, oh, no, if you eat now, then you won't be hungry when you get home. You'll get in trouble for not eating dinner, yell at it. I started to turn to go to the car.
Mm-hmm.
But my gut feeling said, no, you have to go in there. It's something you have to see. So I went, and I was smart enough. I recognized it. I turned and went back into the store. and ordered a sandwich, and I'm thinking, what am I in here to see? There's something it's important for me. And all of a sudden, I saw a flash out of my corner of my eye, and some guy drew my attention clear in the back in the kitchen, and I look back, and I see this guy, and immediately I think it's Bob Marley. He looks like Bob Marley. He has the dreadlocks. He's wearing a black T-shirt with a with on the front was an orange, green, and yellow swatch across it that said that looked like the Jamaican colors. And so I'm watching him. But what I really caught my attention, I swore I saw the numbers 823 on his back of his shirt when he had briefly turned. But I couldn't. He was now facing me, and I couldn't see it any longer. And I'm thinking, this can't be. This pot, if that numbers are on there, there's something to do with him, you know. Well, sure enough, he comes walking forward with my sandwich. And when he turned to walk away, his dreadlocks moved a bit, and I saw the numbers. I yelled out to him, "Oh, come back here, buddy!" And I said, "Excuse me, could you turn around? Is that the number 823 on the back of your shirt?" And he turns around, and sure enough, it says 000823. And he turns around, I said, "Why do you have these numbers on your shirt? What does this mean?" And the front definitely had the Jamaican colors, and it had a little Buddha in the corner. And now I knew something was happening here. I mean, there's no way I came in here by accident not to see this Bob Marley guy. So I would start questioning him, and he has a heavy Jamaican accent. I couldn't make heads or tails out of what he was even saying. But he's shaking my hand, because I told him, I said, "I didn't show up here by accident. This something's going to happen," I said, "pretty soon." So I leave. I get done, and I figure, well, I don't know what it was. And I walk out, and this is how quick it happens. I get in my car, turn on the car, start to go down the street, and I immediately start to worry about the IRS and getting ready for Chicago and all these things. And on the radio pops up Bob Marley singing, "Don't worry, every little thing's going to be all right." Immediately I recognize the message. I mean, here I saw Bob Marley 2 minutes ago, and now Bob Marley was sending me the message, "Don't worry, every little thing's going to be all right." And I just, the smile came over me, and from that point on, I was just like, everything was gone. And they send the messages like that from the other side. They are always lined up there for you. It may be Bob Marley, it may be somebody else, but it will, if you stay tuned into it, I'm so tuned into it now that it doesn't, it rarely slips by me.
Yeah, I had a similar incident. I was asked to do a chapter in a book called Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. The editor, Stephanie Marone, I'd interviewed her on many radio shows, and she called me up and said, "You have to be in this book because, you know, it's about women, the goddess principle, women leading and everything." And I said, "Well, I don't have time," because I was writing this other book on the naked truth about breast implants. So I was, you know, heavy into that plus the practice. And she said, "Well, you have to be in this book. I'm going to call you up and interview you, and I'll write it for you." And I said, "Well, that sounds pretty good." So that's what she did. And this book, when it came out, it has Jane Fonda, Shirley MacLaine, Whoopi Goldberg, Oprah, J.R. Rowling's, Michelle Obama, you know, this kind of thing.
I met all of them except for Michelle Obama, and I didn't actually meet J.K. Rowling. I've worked with her on movies, but
so
it's
you
amazing.
Know all these
all
women,
those people.
Yeah.
Well, I've met them all in doing the promotions, but when you were naming them down there, I thought, wow, that's pretty incredible.
And I'm chapter 33, which is my number.
Yeah, so you're 33.
So I ended up, you know, I wasn't surprised when I found out I was chapter 33, which is spirituality and healing.
Oh, yeah.
It's really amazing.
Right. Oh, it is. It's totally, I mean, totally amazing how another author will put together a book that has the numbers that coincide all together on that page that means something in your life. I mean, I just had this happen recently with another author that I went to listen to talk, and I got her book, and then I got home, and she's questioning her own self the whole way along this path that she's writing about.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got to page 23, chapter 8 on page 23, and there it was the thing, "Are there signs in the universe?" was the heading of that. I mean, there were the numbers 8 and the 23, and the thing I talk about the most are signs and synchronicities, and that's what she chose to head up that, you know, it ended up on page 23 with chapter 8, and I mean, I clearly saw that everyone out there is connected, and we've all written this incredible play that intermeshes so perfectly with each other that it's beyond belief. A good example is the movie Avatar. I mean, it sold over $2 billion worth of tickets and continues to climb.
That's
because the underlying message is we're all connected, and that resonates with everyone out there. They're flocking to see it because that feeling of connection. Facebook, another example. I'm out on Facebook with my book, and I'm on there myself, and that everyone loves it because of the connection, the reconnecting with everyone.
Well, wouldn't it be a different world? And I think this is the world that we're headed toward. You know, one by one, people are waking up to the fact that this is not a world of, you know, kind of horrible suffering and chance,
right,
happenstance, and gee, you could go out today, get in a car wreck and be quadriplegic, or, you know, just horrible things happen and there's nothing you can do about it, and suffering is the basis of our life here, which is what some of the religions teach, because we're sinners, you know.
Yeah.
But instead, I believe that one by one we're waking up to the facts that, number one, we are all connected. We are not alone. You can get tremendously useful information from your dreams, from just asking. But you do have to ask. I mean, you do
right.
have to say, I'll give an example. I've said on the show before, it's really kind of a funny example. A friend of mine who was a doctor wanted to borrow some money from me, but I noticed that she was kind of irresponsible, so I didn't know if I should lend it to her. So I asked the universe for a sign.
Uh-huh.
And I was watching Saturday Night Live, and this guy comes up with a cardboard sign, and on it it says, "I have spent all my money, give me some of yours." So I called her up and told her I couldn't lend her the money.
Yeah.
So the point, isn't that great?
Yeah.
So the point is, you just have to ask for a sign.
Well, you know, and to take that another step further, the story I told earlier about where I almost died and my mom asked my dad, right, asked
mm-hmm.
for my dad to be there.
Right.
This story continues on, and anybody that doubts that there's another place that we go to when we die and that we don't really die, this should solidify it for them that there is life after we pass on from here. And that is that last August, the 21st, just in 2009 here, I just signed the book for deal for a publisher with my book, and I just hired a publicist that day, and she asked me to put together 10 questions that people would want to ask
mm-hmm.
me about the book. Well, I had a producer friend in my office, and he had read my book and knew all about it. You know, he was anxious to help me on this, and I said, well, the one question, I said, let's start. I said, I know the one question everybody says, is this still happened to me? And I related the story of my dad and everything I just told
mm-hmm.
you. And he said, wow, that he had never heard the story. And he was, wow, that's an incredible story. And when I was finished, this was at 5 o'clock on August 21st, 2009. I said, well, yeah, that was really great to hear from my dad. I said, you know, I feel him when he's around me. I can tell when he's near me. And I said, that's really cool. But I said, it was so dynamic the way that he sent that message that I said,
mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear from him like that again. Okay, so 3 hours later, I'm sitting at home. It's 8 o'clock on that Friday evening,
mm-hmm.
and something inside me is saying, check my email. And I go up and try to get on the Internet, and it's locked out. And so, again,
mm-hmm.
I went at, my conscious mind says, oh, you can do it tomorrow, you know. And I start to push it away, but my subconscious mind, no, you've got to check it now. And I go, I know, I'll check it on my cell phone. So I download the messages into my cell phone, and I pop open the email. The first email pops up from Bob Rogers. I about
really?
Dropped the phone. When you hear where this came from, you
uh-huh.
will not doubt that there is another side of
yeah.
where we go. I about dropped the phone on the floor. I'm thinking, could my dad have possibly gotten to a terminal somewhere and got him?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, because he's the only Bob Rogers I know. Well,
right.
I open it up, and it's from a Bob Rogers in Evanston, Illinois. And he's writing to me, you know, dear Randy, I saw this video you produced on
mm-hmm.
YouTube for Steve Crow. Could you please tell me what happened to him? I'm a friend of his, and I obviously he's passed away, and what's going on? Well, Steve Crow was a friend of mine, and I had worked with him at NBC out here.
Mm-hmm.
And we both flew World War II planes, and he had flown a B-25 quite a bit for before he passed away. And he had died just a few months earlier. This guy didn't know it. And we had a big memorial for him up at the airport where we both hung out, and
mm-hmm.
they flew the B-25 over. I videotaped the whole thing, and then
mm-hmm.
I posted this whole little memorial to him on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that day, now this Steve guy goes on looking for his friend, Googles his name because he hadn't heard from him in a while, and couldn't figure out what happened to him, and
mm-hmm.
up comes this video of this memorial.
Right.
So I send the reply back to him. I think, Bob, here's what happened to Steve. But beyond that, and I tell him the story about the synchronicities and what I had just asked for. I said I had
uh-huh.
asked to hear from my dad, and you, with the same spelling again, I mean, R-O-G-E-R-S, the Bob Rogers, I said, you send me this message. I said, I investigate these things. I said, what made you go on the Internet today looking for Steve? He said, oh, that was easy. Steve just came into my thoughts.
Right.
And I said, well, I hope you understand that that was Steve saying hello to you from the other side. And that was Steve and my dad saying hello to me. I said, it's a coordinated effort on the, you know, on the other side to send the message over.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, there's no one can tell me that there's any other explanation when I asked for something 3 hours earlier and it shows up.
Oh, no.
My book is full of these stories like this that occurred along the way. And just,
but can you imagine a world, though, where everybody is at the level of consciousness where they know that they are perfectly on their path and that everything is okay and a letter can arrive from the IRS and they're not going to worry about it because they're told not to worry about it. You know, or if something comes in that's really important, you identify it right away and handle it rather than let it get it lost and have a bigger problem later on.
Right.
But, you know, it's just that I think that we're getting there. And I think one by one, and that's why your book's so important because, you know, a lot of people, you know, I interview a lot of the physicists and the superstring people and Amit Goswami, the, you know, quantum people.
Right.
But not everybody can understand physics. Not everybody can understand the chemistry, the chemists and the biologists and everything. And they're all coming to the same conclusion. But your book, I think, can be read by anyone. And if they just take, you know, pay attention to what you're saying and then apply it to their own life, I think that they will see the synchronicities.
Oh, it definitely, the minute they read the book, I get the email saying, it's happening to me now. And I said, it's not happening to you now. It's been happening. You just opened your eyes now.
Yeah, you didn't
realize. Now you're going to see things really start to change in your life. And you're going to start to feel good about the way things are happening. And you'll understand why things are happening. And when you touched about something that I wanted to go back on was about people that do suffer in this world. I have friends that have cerebral palsy and Down syndrome. And things like that, and people think, oh, God, they're so, you know, they have such a hard life. And it's, no, they came into this life knowing that that was going to be their challenge, that they were going to, they were a tough enough spirit to handle this role. And I said, and they are gaining a greater spiritual growth than someone who doesn't take on a role as tough as that. I said, that's why we all have to challenge ourselves. You can't just kick back and do nothing, because people, that's the next thing they say is, well, if everything's preordained, if we wrote this out, then why should I do anything? Why should I interact? Because you're part of the play, and you're drawn into it just like the rest of us. The drama and everything that surrounds you will draw you into playing the character you're here to play.
It's very true. I know that you have a great interest in cancer, because you've done you know, in your book and everything. I wanted to share with you before we have to a story that happened. I have a cancer clinic that people come from where they're, you know, they're considering either with chemotherapy and they want holistic methods to help that, or some people choose not to have chemo and radiation. And, of course, we're able to do surgery for some cancers as well, and sometimes that's very important. But in any case, I had a patient come in with metastatic esophageal cancer, and I took care of, he had 12 rounds of chemo, and I did a lot of things with supplements and herbs, and he was very good. He didn't have even fatigue, didn't lose his hair, you know, did very well. But I went to California for vacation, and I had a feeling that when I was in California, he was going to die. And sure enough, I was at Lake Tahoe and eating in a restaurant, and he appeared. And I said, hey, Wiley, have you died? And he said, yeah. He said, and I wanted to come talk to you and ask you a favor. I said, yeah, what? And he said, I want you to give a message to my wife. I said, sure, no problem. And so he gave me the message. And, then when I got back home, I called his wife and I said, Wiley has a message for you. And she said that message was, you know, she knew that was valid. And I said, she had said that she had gone to a psychic right when Wiley had gotten sick, and the psychic said that he would have 12 rounds of chemo, he would do very well, but then he would eventually die of the disease. She told me that he only had one night of pain, which I think you can understand is really remarkable for somebody with metastatic cancer. But in any case, before he left, I said to him, I said, Wiley, is there anything else we could have done for you? And he says, no, my death was karmic.
Right.
And when I was talking to his wife, I said, well, what did he mean by his death was karmic? And she said, well, the psychic said that in a previous life, I had left him.
Right.
And in this life, he had vowed to leave me.
Right. Yeah.
So that brings in a whole nother realm beyond the physical with cancer.
Yeah. That's what when I was talking about, you can't judge what's going on in people's lives because no matter what you think they should
you
do
can't.
Or you're trying to project what you think should happen and you can't because
and that
they
was
have
the
their
contract.
Own set of,
they had the contract.
Right, they had the contract and it was going to happen.
It was going to happen.
And just like my friend Kathy was going to, whenever I got so upset that I thought I could have saved her, I could have done something, if I'd have been there or been somewhere, you want to go back in time, you want to change things. And she kept saying, no, everything happened the way. This story would not be here today if she would not have completed her part of the contract to do this.
And she wasn't even alive.
Right. And my connection to her now is stronger than ever, and everything that has happened is just the way it was supposed to be.
Right.
And you can't go back and try to change
that. And you should have no regrets. You should have no fear of the future and no regrets of the past. Well, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. It's thekeyoflife.net is my website for the book. And or randolphrogers.com is another way you can get to the same website. Or you can find me on Facebook under Randy Rogers or The Key of Life. I have a fan page on there as well. So either one of those if you're Facebook fans. And, of course, the book is out on Amazon and Barnes & Noble on the web, too. You can order it through there. But if you order it through my website, I can sign it for you. If you put a little note on there who you'd like it made out to, I can sign the book through thekeyoflife.net or randolphrogers.com.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I have a few announcements. The next week we're going to be interviewing Joan Newcomb, Tapestry of Time, which is, I think, a similar book. It's interesting. I have two of them in a row that are more stories rather than, more nonfiction-type books or non-story-type books. And then on the 17th, I'm interviewing Richard Smalley, The Dice Game of Shiva. And on the 24th, we're having Dr. Hildegard Staninger back for a toxicology update. We have the Noetic Science Meeting on the 15th of April. I'm actually presenting my book, Gotta Shift, Women Leading for a Change. And then on the 22nd, Dr. Brad Gould is going to be giving a free lecture on the importance of vitamin D at our Georgetown Square office. And I want to thank Randy for joining us. It's been a delightful conversation. And if you have any other desire to come on the show, please let us know, and we'll have another conversation.
Well, great. Yeah, we can always go further with the subject.
We can.
All right. Well, thank you, Doctor.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong, it was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.